As any section we have in Sefer Shmuel and Tanakh. And what we've been really discussing, to summarize what we've said over the last 2 weeks, is the idea of my own thesis for the story is sin as a kind of a self-betrayal, right? We have two kind of extreme poles in the classical interpretations. In the Talmudic interpretation, David is effectively exonerated on technical grounds. She wasn't really married, the conditional divorce. He was guilty of the death penalty, guilty of a capital crime, excuse me, because of his Mored B'malchus, his rebellion. He didn't listen to David when David told him to go home, Uriah, that is. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the Abravanel said he's guilty of all these crimes and worse, right? He got other people killed, and then he, you know, marries Bathsheba, and he adds insult to injury. And what I suggested was kind of a middle ground or a third approach, which is that even if you want to accept, right, unlike the Abravanel, the Talmudic version, David HaMelech is betraying his core principles. And his core principles had to do with, number one, a fundamentally egalitarian sense, Levilti Rum Levavo Me'achav, that the office exists to serve the people, not the other way around. And these are abuses of power. His relationship with Bathsheba is abuse of his role as the king. Right? Who else could have first seen her from on top of the palatial Gog? In fact, I could have mentioned this. The archaeologists think that they've discovered David HaMelech's palace, and they can actually demonstrate how he had this kind of like a panoramic vision of what we now call Ir David, southern Yerushalayim, or immediately south of the old city of Yerushalayim. So even the sin itself was only possible archaeologically because of his role as the king, you know, in terms of the structure and architecture of the palace. Moreover, right, there's respect for the army of Israel. Going back to the story of Goliath, how can it be that David is now utilizing the army of Israel to basically carry out, you know, a personal killing? Third, right, his relationship with Yoav. He said before that Yoav is, you know, a person that has engaged in deplorable, appalling acts with respect to Avner. And now, you know, Yoav is, his co-conspirator in terms of Uriah HaChiti. How does that happen? This is something of a profound self-betrayal, you know, as we've explored it. And, it's one thing that leads to another thing, which leads to another thing. It becomes this, you know, terrible pathology of sin and its aftermath, which is really where I wanted to start with this wonderful citation here from the Gemara in Masach Tesukah, where the sages, you know, they develop this idea of, you know, the Yetzer Hara and how sin, metastasizes. Amar Rava b'tchila kera'o Helech. At first, it's called the kind of a guest. Ulevasov kiro oreach, a more permanent kind of a guest, right? Somebody who's staying over. Ulevasov kiro o ish. Shenemar vayevo helech liish haashir vayechmol lakachas mitzono mibkaro lasos loreach uksiv vayikachas kivsas haish harash vayasel liish haboi love. So basically, they're using the story of David HaMelech to explain how sin goes from maybe like a fleeting thought to something which is more entrenched, to something which is then, you know, at a core part of a person. And the reason that they're drawing, you could have, you know, made this point in the abstract, but clearly, I think, you know, indisputably, the reason that Chazal are developing the idea of how the Yetzer Hara works, how it expands from something peripheral to something which then ensnares us, and can even define us, is because in this story, right, David HaMelech sees her, then decides to call her, and then she's pregnant, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's, you know, getting Uriah to come home, and having Uriah, you know, abandon his comrades in the field, and, well, then that doesn't work, so he sends him off to, you know, to die, and the cover-up. It's something that metastasizes. Sin becomes... moves from the periphery very much to the center. And that's really at the core of what this story is all about. So now we have the famous parable of God remonstrating with David. This is, we'll do the first half of the 12th chapter tonight, through Natan HaNavi. And he gives the famous parable of the sheep, really one of the most famous sections in all of Tanakh. And let's first discuss, you know, the use of mashal itself. It's a very fascinating way of giving tochacha. So I think we can all appreciate that, you know, when people are confronted in a very direct way, what often happens is that people get defensive. They have all kinds of excuses. If you present something in a neutral way, right, we're not talking to the person, we're just talking about a situation. Most of the Mefarshim assume that David HaMelech thought that this actually happened. When Natan HaNavi gives him, you know, this story that we're about to read about two men, and one is rich and one is poor, and there's a terrible abuse of the indigent individual, that David takes it very seriously. That David thinks that this actually is something that happened, and he gives a verdict in terms of what needs to happen. That could have never taken place had David, been personally charged. It would never have that kind of objectivity. But I think there's something more important here. Actually, far more important, which is that the mashal, of course, ends up being about a keves, about lambs. And there is, in my judgment, a scathing, scathing critique, much worse than direct tochacha, than direct rebuke, by using this mashal of someone who took the poor man's sheep, as we'll read. Because as we've said for the last 2 weeks, our reading of David and Bathsheba is about David forgetting where he came from. Me'acharei hatzon, min hanaveh. He was once that person, the afterthought, who worried and cared for each and every sheep. And in the rage, in David's righteous indignation at this story that he hears, you hear the authentic David come out. How dare that rich man abuse his wealth, his power, his privilege over the poor man? You hear the voice of the shepherd boy, pure and pristine. And so, actually, mashal, the parable, is a far more direct way, in my judgment, of getting at the truth of what happened, which is that, David, you betrayed yourself. You forgot yourself. You forgot who you were and who you should be. It's no accident. I'm sure Natan HaNavi, especially with divine inspiration and prophetic vision, could have thought of a different parable. This is no accident. So let's read the story. Vayishlach Adonai et Natan el David vayavo elav vayomer lo shnei anashim hayu be'ir. There are two men in the city, echad ashir ve'echad rash. One is indigent, the other is wealthy. V'ashir yatzonu v'kar harbe me'od. The wealthy one has many cattle, many sheep. V'larash ein kol, and the poor man has nothing. Ki im kivsa achat k'tana asher kana. Vayichayaha, and the little that he has, he invests it all in making sure that this sheep is properly cared for. He husbands his meager resources to care for this sheep. Vatigdalimo vimbanav yachtav, right? This sheep is a member of the household, growing up with his own children. Mipito tochal. Almost like a child in its own right. It eats of the family dinner, drinks from the family cup, it sleeps in the family bed. Vayavo heilach liish ha'ashir. And somebody, it's not as if this person, this passerby, is somehow important in the life of the ish ha'ashir. Right? It's just another Tuesday for him. And he says, you know, can't bear, I'd like to make a meal for this passerby, but, you know, I've got 1,000 sheep, but I don't want to waste it on this passerby. Vayachmol lakachan mitzono mibkaro lasot lal reyach. Says, you know, I'd like to do something for this wayfarer, for this traveler, for this guest. Habalo vayikachat kifsada ish harash, and he takes this sheep that the poor man had, that was like a child to him. Vayasel ha'ish habayilav. He slaughters it and offers it to the guest. Right? It wasn't for his mother, it wasn't for his father. It was just a capricious and arbitrary act of cruelty for no good reason. And David is enraged, infuriated. Vayicharav David ba'ish me'od, incensed. Vayomer al Natan, Chai Hashem, ki ben mavet ha'ish ha'osezot. This man will die. Now again, he didn't commit a capital crime. He stole an animal. The Torah talks about, you know, a person who steals an animal, tvacho mecharo. So if it's a sheep, he has to pay four times over. So David says, yeah, he'll pay four times over, but he'll die also. Normally in halacha, you can't both get the death penalty and have a monetary penalty. That's called kim lev d'rab minei. Right? V'era kivsa yishalem arbatayim, ekev asher asar devar zeh, v'al asher lo chamal, because he had no compassion. Amal b'min. Well, the Mepharshim point out that David HaMelech was serious. He was going to put him to death based on what we call Mishpat HaMelech, that the Melech has the right, Makin Ve'onshin Shalom in Hadin, if he thinks something is so egregious in society, as part of his mandate of maintaining order and discipline in society, so can he do, so shall he do. It's interesting, Rav Shlomo Meir Kagan, the Chafetz Chaim, in his Sefer Avas Chesed, points to this pasuk, Va'al asher cholo chamal, and he says, if you read this story, you see how seriously Judaism takes cruelty. What was David so upset about? Why was David prepared to say that this man must die? Al asher lo chamal, somebody who lacks compassion. And if you go to literature of the Rambam of Maimonides, you see this all over the place. For the Rambam, a Jew is defined by the quality of mercy, and achzarios, cruelty, is the antithesis of what being a member of the Jewish people is and must be. Ve'al asher lo chamal. So vayomer Natan al David, ata ha'ish. You are the man that you just sentenced to death. Ko'amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Anochi Meshachtich LaMelech Al Yisrael. I made you. I anointed you. Anochi Tzaltich HaMiyad Shaul, Ve'adna Lechad Beit Adonecha, V'neshe Adonecha Bechekecha, Ve'adna Lechad Beit Yisrael V'yudah, V'ima'ad V'yosif Lecha Kahena V'chahena. I gave you everything that you have. You have plenty. Madua Bazisa Estavar Hashem. How dare you desecrate my word? It's a sin of Chilul Hashem, because when a king does something, a king who must represent God in this world, he's an ambassador of God, he has to carry the Sefer Torah around in all places, at all times. How dare you behave in such an immoral way? You represent me. I chose you. Your choices are a referendum on my choice of you. Madua bazisa dvar Hashem lasos hara beinai, es Uriah hachiti hikita vacherev, es ishto lakachta chali isha. Ve'oso haragta becherev b'nei Amon. Interesting. You killed Uriah with the sword. You took his wife as your wife. And you killed him with the sword of b'nei Amon. The Radak notes, very interesting. The Abravanel has it as well. Why does the Torah come back and repeat the murder of Uriah? Then normally we would say that there's a principle in halacha in shaliach ledvar aveira. There's no Nuremberg defense in halacha. You can never say, I was just following orders. Yoav cannot say that in general if somebody would tell Yoav to commit a murder. But when it comes to the king, it's a little different because the king has power over life and death, and there's always the threat of being a morid b'malchus. And so even if the principle of Ein Shaliach L'Dvar Aveira is a generally applicable halacha, that once an agent commits a sin, he is solely responsible, halachically, because he made his own choices. When the melech, when the king, is the one who sent you, that's a different story. Because the king isn't just any mishaleach, he is not just any person who sends a person on a mission, but he is endowed with awesome power. And so Natan says, I know what you'll tell me. Well, you're not the one who killed him. No, you killed him with somebody else's sword. And therefore, midah keneged midah, a measure for a measure for a measure. All of David's sins will be visited on his head. Ve'ata lo tasur cherev mibeitcha ad olam. The rest of your life, the sword shall ravage your home, even into the next generation. You brought violence on Uriah. Ekev kivizisari vatikachas eshes Uriah chiti liot lecha leisha. Not only that, Ko'amar Hashem, hinini mekim alecha ra'ami beisacha. This, of course, is a nevuah about Avshalom, that you will suffer terribly from within your own house. You destroyed another family in Israel, the family of Uriah and Bathsheba. Your family will consume itself. The second midah keneged midah. Now the third, v'lakachti es nashecha le'inecha, v'nasati le'reyacha v'shechavim nashecha le'inei ha'shemesh hazos. And your wives will be taken from you. This will be an important part of the Avshalom story. Ki ata asisa v'asaser, you acted surreptitiously in a clandestine fashion and desecrated my name in that way. V'ani e'eses hadavar hazeh neged kol Yisrael v'neged hashamesh, you will reap the whirlwind in public. Or as the sages teach us in Pirkei Avos, anybody who desecrates God's name in private will be served his just desserts in public. Kol ha-mechalol shem shamayim baseser nifra'in mimenu begaloi. And all David says, Vayomer David el Nasan, chatasi l'Hashem. I have sinned unto God. Vayomer Nasan al David, Gam Hashem hevir chatascha lo samos. And so Nasan can respond to David immediately and say, God will be ma'avir this chait. Doesn't talk about slicha, doesn't talk about kapar, doesn't talk about mechila. That will have to come with terrible suffering. The cherev and the ra mi beisecha, and what happens to David in terms of his own wives. So what we're talking about here is something very serious. But David will not die from this. There can be a second act. The Malbim writes, Vayomer Nasan al David, Zehaya Hevdel ben David uvein Shaul. This alone save David. Sheshol Nasan Amsalos al Cheto. When it came to Amalek, Shaul had every excuse in the book. And then some. V'lachein nigzar alav onesh. As Shmuel said to him at the time, this protestation on your part, this refusal to accept responsibility, accountability, is no better than idolatry. Own your mistakes. V'David hodet techef, and David acknowledged sin immediately. V'lo heshev sha'asa ha'kol beheter. He didn't make excuses. He didn't talk about conditional divorces or non-conditional divorces. He didn't talk about Uriah being a morid b'malchus. He said, chatasi la'Hashem. V'hodio anavi she'Hashem kibel tshuvaso, if not right away, but at least certainly in time. David here came by this honestly. Of course, the greatest moment of accountability that we have in the Torah, in Chumash itself, this is not even close, is of course the progenitor of Malchus, is Yehuda. When the chips were down, when Yehuda had to make a choice, does he allow the pregnant woman, his daughter-in-law? The people are prepared to mete out her sentence. Hotziua v'tisaref. She violated their honor code. She was supposed to spend the rest of her life, effectively, just waiting to see if Yehuda would honor his word or not. And Yehuda has to choose in that moment between his reputation. To think that Yehuda, this noble persona, was with a zonah, was with his own daughter-in-law. The shame and the stigma. He has to choose. Will he preserve his image, or will he own his actions? And Yehuda says it in his own two words, tzadka mimeni. And of course, in that moment, he acknowledges having had a relationship with his own daughter-in-law. He acknowledges having been with a woman that he thought was a zonah, a prostitute. But he acknowledges it. And of course, it at that moment saves himself from what otherwise would have been a terrible act of murder. Tzadka mimeni. It's the beginning of a totally redemptive period in Yehuda's life where he's able to revisit many sins of his past. And of course, most importantly, his sin against Yosef, his sale of his brother. Tzadka mimeni paves the way for what Yosef later hears from Yehuda. Yeshev nav decha tachas hanar eved ladoni v'anar yali mechav. It's a moment of tshuva that catalyzes more moments of tshuva. Yehuda becomes a baal tshuva. And thereby earns the malchus. No king is infallible. But the most important thing, and I think we can all appreciate this, living in the unprecedented times that we do, we can't expect our leaders to be perfect. But we should expect our leaders to take accountability. That is fundamental to the very concept of leadership. Yehuda becomes the leader of the brothers because he assumes responsibility for Binyamin. In so doing, he assumes responsibility for his own past. Awesome power is invested in the office of the Melech. And the only way we could trust a mortal, one who is by definition fallible, to occupy a position of such awesome power is if that person has the character to acknowledge wrongdoing. Shaul did not have that. And so in two words, Sadka Mimeni, Yehuda paves the way for David's two words, Chatasi Lasha. It won't be easy. He'll pay a severe price. An unimaginable price. I'm not just talking about Avshalom, but everything that leads up to that, everything we'll start looking at beginning next week. A horrific price. He'll be deposed. He'll be shamed and humiliated from every direction. But David will claw his way back. You see, when a person cannot acknowledge, as Yehuda did, as David did, when a person cannot acknowledge wrongdoing, all that can possibly happen is they go deeper and deeper and deeper into sin. And one sees how the story of Bathsheba begins in that direction. David sins. Tries to cover it up and it gets worse. And this was the most important moment of his life. When Nathan said to him, Ata ha'ish, you are the man, Asher lo chamal, who demonstrated no humanity in taking that sheep and killing it, or in taking that woman and having her husband killed. The most important moment of David's life is he faces that and says, I'm responsible. I've said it many times in this series, David is not perfect. There are serious shortcomings. We talked earlier on in Sefer Shmuel about shortcomings as a father. Those will be on full display. This is very serious. This sin implicates at least two of the Gimel Chamuros, Shfichos Damim and Giloy Arayos. It's very serious. But David's ability to acknowledge, take responsibility for his sin, opens up the possibility, does not guarantee, but opens up the possibility of rehabilitation. Gam Hashem hevir chatas chalos amos. Had David hesitated, had David done what Shaul did, it's not my fault, it's the people, I wanted to offer korbanos. That's why I didn't exactly. Okay, 99%. I did most of what God said. Had David hesitated for a moment, his fate would have been the same as Shaul. And so, in chapter 12, it was the worst of times and it was the best of times. It's a grievous sin. And there must be accountability. But Judaism has held that rehabilitation is possible even for the most grievous of sins, when a person is prepared to acknowledge failure. God never asked us to be infallible. Lo nisna Torah lo malachei asharis. God asked us to do our best. God asked us to acknowledge failure and to try to be better. David has captured the heart of the Jewish people in a way that very few of the heroes of Tanakh have. David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayam. There's something so fundamentally approachable about David. In his fallibility, he reminds us, specifically because of the grievous, grievous nature of this sin. A sin, hopefully, that most of us can see as beyond that which we're capable of. But David reminds us of the possibilities of rehabilitation. The human experience is infinitely complex. David, who has so much to his credit, who was so admired by Chazal for his commitment to the Jewish people and to Torah. The depth and profundity of his relationship with God is what Sefer Tehillim is all about. We've been learning it now every single day for almost a year. It's so beautiful. He gave us the very language through which we think about our relationship with God. Gam kelech begeitz hamaves. Lo yirarach yata imadi yishir malos mimamakim krasicha Hashem, shivisi Hashem, lenegdi samid, ashrei ha'ish asher lo halach vatsas v'shem. He created the soundtrack of our relationship with God. Nothing less. And, at the same time, he sinned in grievous, grievous way. But he showed that rehabilitation was possible. Chatasi l'Hashem. When we're prepared for radical accountability. It's hard for us, maybe impossible, to relate to Moshe. Va'ish Moshe anav me'od mikol ha'adam asher al pnei ha'adama. Moshe lived at a different plane. Lechem lo achal mayim lo shasar bayim yom. Lo kam b'Yisrael navi ke Moshe asher yedau Hashem panim al panim. Moshe, to a great degree, even if the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Tshuva that we could all aspire to be as righteous as Moshe, some of us wonder whether indeed that remains within the realm of possibility. David, he entrances us with his accessibility, with his approachability. Great greatness. And yet, frailty. These two words, the most important two words David ever said in his life. I've sinned to God. And a person who can say that, God says, it's going to be painful. There's going to be a lot of suffering. Expiation will come at terrible personal cost. But there's a path. Gam Hashem hevir chatas chalos amos. There's a path. It's a brutal path, but there's a path. God is willing to work with us. At the heart of Judaism lies a fundamental belief in the possibilities of rehabilitation and restoration, of sin, of debasement, of defiling oneself, as we've discussed, the sin more than anything else is David's self-betrayal of the man he once was, of the person that he should have been. And yet, at the very core of Judaism lies a belief that a person, kol od nishmato bo, as long as the breath of life is within us, we can acknowledge our mortal frailties and strive to rebuild our relationship with God. Lev tahor, bira li elokim v'ruach nachon chadesh bekirbi. As David says in Psalm 51, which is the psalm that he wrote, of course, Bevoi lav Natan Adavi, when Natan came to him. The possibility of rehabilitation exists, but only if we can be honest with ourselves. Mizmor leDavid Hashem miyagor bialacha miyishkon b'har kodshecha. Who can be in God's presence? Holech tamim fal tzedek v'dover emes bilvavo. You have to be honest with yourself, David said. Even if that honesty requires us to acknowledge terrible shortcomings. From here, David's suffering will be brutal. We'll start next week. The images are excruciating of what David is made to endure. But he's matzdik es hadin. We'll see throughout, David accepts all that comes his way. Horrific things. Basically unimaginable things. Compounded one after the other for the next six chapters as this process of expiation. And David accepts it all as the will of a Lord whose ways are just and righteous altogether. Tziduk HaDin. Chatasi Lashem. And therefore I have to bear that price. You know, they say that everybody in jail claims to be innocent. Not a guilty man in the building. You know, David was the exception to that. We can't admire what David did. It's a depraved act. It's a betrayal of everything that we admire about him otherwise. But we can admire. We should admire. We must admire his capacity for accountability. Chatasi Lashem. We live in a world when people get caught, they hire PR firms. They have names for these people. Damage control, crisis management. The entire point of which is to avoid, you know, some authentic soul searching. How not to lose your corporate sponsors. How to avoid paying the price for what you actually did. Chatasi Hashem. I've failed. And I accept the consequences. consequences, we shall begin to discover how severe they are starting a week from tonight. Everybody be safe. Have a wonderful week. Let's go to Ruthie.
All right, thanks.
Not at all.
I have two questions.